Welcome to the Missions Podcast, the show that explores your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, Director of Advancement and Mobilization for ABWE International, joined yet again by Scott Dunford, Lead Church Planter for Redeemer Church in Fremont, California, and West Coast Mobilizer with us. And Scott, we were just talking a moment ago about what it would be like to declare no meeting Mondays. Usually when people listen, it's on Monday, the day that these episodes drop. And I got to admit, if I could just have a standing policy that says, don't bother me on Mondays, I don't want to schedule any of my meetings for a Monday, that would be phenomenal. Is that something that's realistic or attainable for you as a pastor, Scott?
We actually have our leadership team meetings on Mondays. So actually, I like meetings on Mondays because my brain is kind of fried from Sunday. And so having meetings and other things that are, you know, don't involve me being super creative or engaging in a deep intellectual level, I kind of like that. It's kind of therapeutic. But different strokes for different folks. And maybe we should have only podcast Mondays so people have nothing to do but listen to the podcast and then deeply reflect on that for the next 7 hours. I don't know. Maybe that's a good idea.
I don't know if there's 7 hours worth of reflection in these things, but hey, anyone who's in pastoral ministry knows the Monday blues is a real thing. And hopefully for some of you guys listening to this podcast as a part of the pick-me-up that you need on Mondays. And we want to talk specifically to part of that audience today. We want to focus on senders and we want to focus on mobilizers. And Scott, we have an expert in that area.
And I've learned a lot from him and I've just really treasured the time I've been able to have with Mark. So we have joining us Mark Silvers from Cross World. It's a mission agency based out of Kansas City, Missouri. And I'll let Mark tell a little bit more of that. But Mark has been involved in mobilization for the last 10 years. But previous to that was a missionary in the Philippines and has served in a lot of different capacities, including working in the corporate world. And really appreciate the heart that's behind it. It's not just a technical exercise for Mark and his team. It's a passion. And so without stealing all of his thunder, Mark, welcome to our show. Can you just tell us a little bit of your background of being mobilized yourself, going to the mission field, end up getting married, having a family, and then how you ended up serving in your current role?
Sure. Thanks, Scott, for the opportunity. Really began to meet mobilization-wise back at Liberty University. Traveled with a team there that was centered around mobilizing. Didn't know that I was actually planning the rest of my life in that singing group, but we ended up traveling a lot around the world and all across the USA during that time. And during that season of life, God began to work in my heart. I always thought I would probably pastor or a missions pastor here in the US and didn't really plan on going overseas. And our second trip to the Philippine Islands back in the late 70s, early 80s, God spoke to about four or five guys that were on that traveling team, and we ended up going back to the field together. And I remained in the Philippines as a single missionary for about 3 years, came home, did my master's degree at Columbia International University, met my wife like the first day of grad school. We got married a year later. She had been serving in Asia as well. We went back to the Philippine Islands and spent the rest of our own field time there. We came home in 95, ended up pastoring a church and associate pastor position at Clearwater Community Church and then at Skycrest Baptist Church in Clearwater, Florida. Through that, ended up mobilizing people. Our team there at Skycrest ended up sending the first couple of families and a single to a created access country. And we did that through Crossworld because I had connections there and left the pastor in 2006. Ended up working with Chick-fil-A Corporation, both as a general manager and then doing some leadership stuff with that store and another store in the area. And I was going home one day when I got a phone call from Crossworld and it said, hey, we're looking for a director of mobilization. Would you consider doing that? You keep sending people all over the world, whether you're working for corporate America or whether you're pastoring or whether you're just sitting around. It seems like you continuously are sending people. And I said, well, actually, I don't know if I want to do that right now because I really enjoy my job. And then after much prayer, we ended up returning to Crossworld in 2009 and moved to Kansas City in 2010 and been leading the team ever since. And we've had ups and we've had downs, if you want to talk numbers, but the consistency is God continues to use the team to send people from all walks of life, all professions, bringing God's love to life in the least reached marketplaces of the world.
Mark, for our listeners who aren't familiar, give us just the 30-second lowdown on who Crossworld is. So obviously, tent making has a lot to do with your model for ministry.
Tent making is the term that would have been used years ago. I think we look at more at it as marketplace professionals. As the world continues to change and it gets harder and harder to send people to certain locations around the world, and it becomes more and more difficult for mission workers, religious vocational workers, if you want to put it that way, to get visas. And probably about more than 10 years ago, Crossworld began to look into how do we solve this problem. And we realized that God was once again opening a door of great opportunity to the nations, but through a different group of people, a group of people that the church had not yet mobilized. We had basically said to the business world and other marketplace professionals, hey, let us religious workers do the work, and you give and you pray. And reality, God's commandment to make disciples of all nations went to all believers, and we should be mobilizing the entire church and just not a selected few. And so Crossroads' dream is that we would see disciple makers from every profession that's out there bringing God's love to life in the least reached marketplaces of the world.
Well, we want to dive in a little bit further and talk more about mobilization and see if tent making is a sustainable model to see more missionaries get to the field. But before we do that, we have a message first.
When we don't train our people to see that the gospel isn't just for unbelievers, but for all of life, including the life of the believer, we actually frustrate their ability to share the gospel with unbelievers. If we're not daily applying the gospel to our life, then we only think about the gospel in those moments where we think to evangelize. And it always has this sort of mechanical sales pitch feel to it because we don't think about it every day and we don't see how it applies to everyday life.
That was the voice of Jared C. Wilson of For the Church and Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. If you're hungry for more, why not join us at the For the Church Conference September 23rd through 24th in Kansas City. We're giving away 2 free tickets to loyal listeners. Enter now at missionspodcast.com/giveaway, and we'll see you there. Let me tell you a story about Abdul. As a teenager in a refugee camp, Abdul lived in a world of uncertainty. After a successful operation on his colon, he should have recovered, but he lost the will to live. And morning after morning, as he lay dying, he heard the voices of nurses beside his bed singing during their morning Bible study. Hospital workers serving with ABWE sat by Abdul's bedside, sharing stories of the Bible with him. But one day, Abdul was talking with a member of the team, and suddenly God opened his eyes and he asked excitedly, "Tell me about Jesus." In the subsequent weeks, he began to smile, he started to eat, regaining his strength. He devoured every story everyone could tell him from the Bible. Abdul had been saved. Now Abdul is back in the refugee camps sharing the gospel with his family and friends. Well, you may have noticed that I didn't mention what country Abdul is living in. That's because we can't for security purposes. About 10% of ABWE's missionaries serve in parts of the world that we can't even mention by name. ABWE's Global Gospel Fund supports workers in limited access countries by providing security expertise, mobilizing those who seek to serve, and training new missionaries. Through the Global Gospel Fund, you can support 1,000 missionaries with one gift. Please become a Global Gospel Fund partner. Go to abwe.org/globalgospelfund. That's abwe.org/globalgospelfund. Well, the main question that we really want to ask you today is, how do we do mobilization in a world and a culture that's afraid to commit to anything long term? And I think we'll be talking about that a lot throughout the course of the interview. So let's continue to dive into that, but specifically the angle of business workers, marketplace people. How do you mobilize them? Because they have their commitments, they have their paychecks that they're making here domestically. I imagine it's a pretty unique approach to get some of them invested in missions. It's not the same as mobilizing and encouraging, mentoring a traditional missionary.
That's true. They come to us in various different ways. The basic needs are going to be the same, obviously. Cross-cultural training, discipleship training, those types of things, crisis contingency training. The difference is a lot of them obviously come to you. They don't need to raise support. Most of them are, their jobs are transferring them overseas already, and they want to be missional in their lifestyle. So they look for an organization that can come alongside them by mentoring them, getting them connected with various networks. But it is a different target. It is a different mindset. Most of the positions around the world for marketplace people are looking for people who already have experience in that field. They're not necessarily looking for someone who just graduated from college. There are some of those opportunities out there. But as with any corporation here in the U.S., as you know, when you go get a job, they're looking for people with at least 3 to 4 years of experience. We're finding that to be true in the marketplace around the world as well. And so where do you go to fish, if you want to put it that way? Where do you go to find people to mobilize? I think it's forcing us to go back to the church, which is where we should have been in the first place, versus going to college universities. We also have found that the average age is someone coming to us to even go overseas as a traditional worker are older. They're late 20s, mid 30s. They've kind of made decisions to seek the Lord and go overseas. Their life is a little bit in order now. They may are usually married, children. And so as we begin to look at the people who we were actually sending out, we realized the age bracket had climbed. And so where do you go to find those people? So you begin to look at like the faith and work movement that's here in the U.S., going to those events, bringing a global aspect to what they're doing. A lot of the faith and work movements here in the U.S. focus mainly on getting people to integrate their faith in the workplace here in the U.S., but no one's really out there challenging them to say, what about the rest of the world? I mean, if you look back even to years and years ago at the beginning of missions movement in the church, some of the first people who went out, think of the Moravians. They just took their trade and went all over the world. And somehow along the way, it shifted. And we only began to send what you would call vocational religious workers professionally trained to do this. And then we said to the rest of the church, you just be seated and let us do the work. And it's amazing to see when churches catch a glimpse that everyone in the church is called to take part, even a businessman, even a doctor, a lawyer. But what if everybody could use the skills that God has already given them and just learn to live their faith out in the hospital, learn to live your faith out in the business where you own, integrate your faith wherever you're at. And getting back to discipleship, it's like learning how to do discipleship as a lifestyle, not, oh, join this program and we'll teach you the 7 steps to be a disciple. But what if our faith was just as simple as Jesus said when he said, follow me and I will make you fishers of men, wherever you're at. And fishing for people when you walk into the local coffee shop is just as important here in the U.S. as it is anywhere in the world. So Crossroads' focus has really shifted greatly, and our paradigm has changed so much.
Let me interrupt you just for a second.
Sure.
So it's interesting because we're seeing some of those same trends for sure. But I want to get if I can just get your insight. You were mobilized as a single person. You served as a married couple. And then now you've been engaged in full-time mobilization for the last 10 years. You've seen kind of a full cycle of ministry. What are some of the differences you're even seeing in the people you're ministering to? The older millennials, I guess they are now, you know, the 30-somethings who are getting involved in missions, the younger ones. What are you seeing? Is there a difference in the people that you're recruiting as far as their motivations? How are you seeing that change?
Yeah, I think we have to get back again to what we're learning from some research. Barna put out an article, 51% of churchgoers don't know the Great Commission. That's greatly impacted mobilization. It's interesting to me how much more time it takes to even introduce the topic of unreached people groups to people who've never heard the term, which really surprises me. So that's one change, is we have to educate a little bit. One of the things I do love about this generation is, while there may be at times this sense of lack of commitment, what I'm finding is it's not so much a lack of commitment to going. Some of it is a lack of commitment to how much time. You know, we live in such a different day and age. When I went to the Philippines as a young 20-year-old, most people went for 4 years. And we just had that mindset. But it also had a lot to do with travel, the lack of technology. You know, we didn't have fax machines when I first went. It took a letter 7 days to get from the Philippines back to the U.S. and then 7 days to get the answer back. And so people come and go all the time. It's not unnatural for me to see someone who has deployed to a field, let's say 6 months ago, 8 months ago, to be walking down the hall. And I'm like, why are you here? We just deployed you. Oh, I came home for this and I'm leaving again tomorrow to go back. That was unheard of years ago. So we have to address that even back in mobilization. I don't really spend a lot of time talking to people about a time frame. We've gone from viewing career missions as a lifetime to long-term commitment now is about 2 years.
That is a big change. Mark, let me cut in here real quick. Wouldn't you say, though, that if we're going to have people in the marketplace making disciples, that's critical and that's the calling of every Christian, whether it's here or abroad. But wouldn't you also say that in order to see healthy, long-term churches established with qualified elders, all the instructions, right, that are given to Timothy and to Titus about contending for the faith over time and biblical leadership. Wouldn't you say that depends not only on individual people making disciples throughout their regular vocations, but also on having kind of a bedrock on your missions team of people that are committed to be there longer term, committed to learning language, committed to full-time ministry as much as possible, even if it is in a creative vocation?
Sure. Right. Whether you're mission worker or marketplace worker, we do address the fact that it takes longer than 1 to 2 years to really have an impact long, long term, especially in the area of planning a church. In light of that, we do some training even when we're here, whether you're marketplace or whether you're a mission worker. Everybody, we would like to, you know, for them to have the language acquisition testing. We want them to consider learning language, especially if they're going to reach outside the marketplace. You know, one of the great things in marketplace is they do have the ability every day to rub shoulders with nationals. It's not like they're going out on the streets trying to find people to talk to engage with the gospel. It's a natural bridge. They're around the same people every day. But to impact something long term, yeah, it does take that longer term commitment. One of the great things is, you know, once you've been on the ground for 2 years and so much has changed in your life, God has just really begun to do a great work in your heart. There's nothing like living overseas to really be forced into spiritual growth. And it's interesting because a lot of people say, yeah, 2 years, I can commit to that. But after the 2 years, they come back and they're like, you know what? I miss it. And a lot of them want to go back. And if they're a marketplace worker, sometimes they can extend their contract with the corporation and remain overseas. It's also a mixture of if the country allows and will issue visas to vocational religious workers, having a team that's both is ideal because mission workers most likely will stay longer than 2 years, and that gives that foundation. The other thing that I'm learning is we really put a lot of emphasis on the disciple making and going deep with people early on, learning to live that lifestyle out and letting the church organically birth versus the way I did church planning when I was overseas and never really owning the oversight of that movement. But as soon as I possibly can, even begin to train local leadership. So from day one, the church is not a church that was planted by a North American, but a church that's birthed out of discipleship, because discipleship's all about multiplication.
Just recently, we did an episode and we're talking to someone who's training people for unengaged and unreached people groups. And his challenge to them is, hey, if you're going to have a long impact, a deep impact on people's lives, you got to really know the language and culture. And so their challenge, here's a group of students all wearing t-shirts saying 20 to life, meaning not they're going to prison, but that they're going to go in, they're going to go deep, and they're going to make sure they really understand what they're dealing with. So when you're talking to young people or even professionals, what is their response to that kind of a mentality? And are they able to come in for that short period of time and recognize that there's going to be some gaps in their understanding? How do you caution them about their lack of knowledge of the culture?
We've got to go back to the fact that we're trying to give, and we have tracks for this now within our training, the same training we would do with a mission worker, we're doing with marketplace people. They are getting cross-cultural training. Even with mission workers, we begin to realize we were front-loading so much stuff on them, like cross-cultural training before they went to the field. For most of them, they were coming back saying, you know, I had no idea what you were talking about when you were doing the training here in the U.S. So we're moving some of this training to on-the-ground training as well, so that they're experiencing the things that they are learning about for anyone going out. As far as long-term impact, staying 20 years, I think people will commit to that, not so much based upon the time frame, but with millennials especially, if the cause is great enough, and as long as they feel like they're making a difference, the commitment is there.
So maybe in the past where we emphasized duty, now you're seeing an emphasis on the cause and the need and Christ's call to be engaged. And it's not just this duty, so to speak.
Right. I can give you an example, Scott. Trying to recruit people to go to a project we have going on in Thailand, which is a paid position. If you tried to market it by saying, hey, you don't have to raise support, there is a salary, doesn't work. Because they don't see how they're making an impact. But if you go back and say, you know, if you get involved in this project, it's proactive in keeping young girls or young boys be sold into human trafficking. Instead of having to rescue them, let's do something at this stage that will keep them from having to go into that lifestyle. That's something they'll buy into. The salary is important. A lot of people don't want to raise support these days, but that's not what's going to sell them on the opportunity.
Because as much as people do tend to push back on the idea of raising support, I've seen just as many people who are millennials who are completely on board with the idea because they recognize that you're doing it in response to God's leadership in your life and obeying the calling. But let me just ask you a different question as well. This might be mildly controversial, but I think one thing that's not helpful in a lot of our churches and in evangelicalism in general is that we tend to, in the Great Commission, we flatten it out as something, right? Every single believer is called to be engaged in this, which is true. Every believer is called to share the gospel, but not every single individual is going to be standing on a soapbox doing open air preaching, right? That's necessary, but there's hands and then there's feet, there's eyes, there's ears, there's all these different parts in the body of Christ. We recognize that God puts us in different stations in life. So how would you say, what's the difference between somebody with the calling of a vocational gospel worker cross-culturally committing their life to frontier missions and somebody who in a business setting is saying, I'm going to just live out my faith? Is there a difference that you guys draw there?
You know, that's a great question. A really great question, Alex, because as we've been working through this, we don't want people who just want to go on an adventure or think it would be great to do their job overseas and yes, maybe live their faith out there. It always will go back to that central gifting and calling. That's where screening comes in, no matter who they are. Are they making disciples here in the U.S., actively involved in frontline type of ministry, even in the U.S. to a certain degree? For us, it gets back to, I don't like the word calling, but there is a sense to that. God has moved in my heart, and I want to take my career to have an impact on the nations, because I want to see God's glory spread across the globe as the waters. We would expect that out of a mission worker as they begin to describe how they've come to this decision in their life. I would expect the same type of leading in a marketplace person. The difference is we haven't presented it in a way for the marketplace person to realize they can do this. We want the marketplace professionals to know the Bible. We want them to be able to share the gospel. We want them to be able to lead small group studies. We want them to be able to know pure doctrine. None of that changes. But, you know, sometimes it's interesting because you give Bible tests or whatever, and you have a seminary grad who scores this amount. and you have a marketplace person who scored higher only because they've been a student of the word for years. There's something deep in their heart, that passion that God has created into them to see the nations worship. And that should be the driving factor, not just that they can get a job overseas where I can't get a job.
Yeah, that's important. And another thing that I would ask as well, because I think, you know, let's be honest, we're all mobilizers here and a little bit of shop talk is okay. You mentioned that you guys are shifting more on speaking to the local church and getting at marketplace workers that way. I'm going to be honest. How are you getting into churches? How are you, you know, because pastors and pulpits are, you know, fought for and protected. And it's not easy to just waltz into churches and have a venue, right? And to have a hearing. And for good reason, right? You know, want to control the way that the church platform is used. So what are you doing to influence churches to encourage their people who are in the secular workforce to think about missions?
Well, I think it's very important to remember that we have to go in to any situation mobilization-wise, especially with the church, with a servant's heart. We need to seek out ways that we can serve the church locally to help them accomplish whatever God's called that to do in relation to their global vision. And that could be all over the place. We have worked hard to develop a DNA of mobilization within Crossworld to where mobilization is driven from our field staff. And because our number one recruiters have always been our field staff. I might not get into that church. That field staff, that international worker, whether he's marketplace or whether he's mission worker, already has an access to that church. So we need to train them to and give them tools that they can use to help educate the church, help support the church, come along and serve the church. It's not an either or. It is a global approach. You're right.
Yeah, we've seen the same thing. Our missionaries are the most effective mobilizers, and we encourage them with that. If you are a missionary, we encourage you to think of mobilization as something that you do, not just as something that your home office with whatever agency you serve with does, because go over there is way less appealing than you saying, hey, come serve here with me. It really does boil down to that. Absolutely. It's a mentorship. It's a life on life thing. Mark, thanks for your wisdom. Appreciate the way that you tackled some of that. How can people hear more from you and learn more about Crossworld?
Two ways. One is they can always contact me through my email address, which is marksilvers@crossworld.org. Go to our website, which is crossworld.org.
Mark, thank you so much for joining us here today. We really appreciate it, and exciting to think more about what God would do to raise up workers for the harvest. If you want to get more great content on theology, missions, and practice, go to missionspodcast.com. And while you're there, subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, or your favorite listening platform. And please give us an honest review and a 5-star rating. And don't forget to be sending your questions to alex@missionspodcast.com. Until next time, thank you for joining us.